Let's tell the truth to people. When people ask, "How are you?" have the nerve sometimes to answer truthfully. You must know, however, that people will start avoiding you because they, too, have knees that pain them and heads that hurt, and they don't want to know about yours. But think of it this way. If people avoid you, you will have more time to meditate and do fine research on a cure for whatever truly afflicts you. Maya Angelou. Hi, this is Carla, and welcome back to There Might Be Cupcakes. I come to you as a conflicted storyteller and diarist. My heart is full, and my head is spinning. Yesterday, after the day that so many women walked out of work to protest Brett Kavanaugh and Donald Trump's tweet about proper reporting of sexual assault, all wearing black and leaving their work unfinished in solidarity with those of us who have been sexually assaulted, a paragon of my age fell because he, too, is sexually violent. And that was just Tuesday, mind you. On Monday, the day of the walkout, I saw my new psychiatrist, and I received a new diagnosis of complex PTSD. For this purpose, what that means is that I'm still damaged by the physical and sexual assaults perpetrated upon me in the autumn of 1991. Still damaged. And you know that I'm a fighter. I don't wallow, nor enjoy the victim role. I make lists of vitamins I can take and books I can read, and I go to the doctor, and I go to the doctor, and I go to the doctor. And I fight, and I fight, and I fight. If I didn't, there'd be no podcast. Imagine if I weren't a fighter. Close your eyes, you know, unless you're driving, please, and imagine my progressive chronic illnesses, along with all their misdiagnoses and all the medical trauma that's gone along with the journey. Imagine that process beginning on top of the damage I'd already been carrying from the assaults, the damage I would have still been carrying were I not such a fighter. Chronic pain and my knees literally getting knocked out from under me by these diseases would have killed me, one way or another. That's the complete honest truth. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. Audre Lorde. Andrea Constant, the brave woman who chose to fight against this pillar of American society, against the Bill Cosby brand itself, has been broken. She admits that. She admits that she was ready to take on the world before Bill Cosby raped her. She was a talented athlete and student and was brimming full of ideas and feelings and desires. Now she lives alone with only her two dogs and says she is afraid of trusting people, even her supporters. According to her, the real Andrea died that day when she lost her mentor as well as the full autonomy of her body. Right now, she's one of the bravest women I can name because she championed this whole fight, and yet her flame is partially hid under a bushel. Because Bill Cosby felt the need to dominate her, to give her drugs against her will through deception, and to have forcible sex with her as she drifted in and out of consciousness. So, Monday, I learned that I am sick because of the assaults that occurred in 1991, when I was just a baby, 19 years old, in my first apartment and my second year of college. I have a mental ill diagnosis, and I own it as that. There's no shame. Because a boy who didn't want me anymore didn't want anyone else to have me, and perhaps wanted to punish me for thriving, reclaim me as his own, I'll never know. But I was 19, and now I'm 46, and I still have major work to do to fix what he broke. I own the fact that I'm not healed, but I hold him responsible for the breaking. I have come to believe over and over again that what is most important to me must be spoken, made verbal and shared, even at the risk of having it bruised or misunderstood. Audre Lorde. On Monday as well, as I said, beautiful, strong women, women I admire, wore black and walked out of their homes and jobs at 1 o'clock to protest the ongoing rape culture in America, to protest Brett Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court in the face of his accusers, and now there are multiple accusers, and to protest Donald Trump's ignorant tweets about reporting sexual assaults. Within exactly 24 hours of the protest, it seemed, on Tuesday, Bill Cosby was sentenced. He was sentenced to 3 to 10 years in state prison, a $25,000 fine, to pay all costs for his prosecution back to the state, and to register as a violent sex offender. Let's break this down. 3 to 10 in state prison means 1. It's state, not federal. So Trump cannot intervene and pardon him. I mention this only because I've seen this mentioned online. And two, he has to serve 3 whole years before become eligible for parole. He then has to pay a restitution fine and all the costs of his prosecution. I think that's a bold statement by the judge, a message that if Cosby had not lied, had cooperated, perhaps pled, given his depositional statements that he knowingly obtained quaaludes for sex for years, that he would admit this, then arrogantly continue to fight and plead not guilty. That's his right. But he owes the state for their hard work in proving him a liar. Now, registration as a violent sexual offender, this means he will never live completely privately again. His victims, as well as local schools and churches, will be notified of his every location and any change in it. He has to report in quarterly, as someone who on probation does, for the rest of his life, even after his release from prison, and he has to attend mandatory monthly counseling for the rest of his life. This last part means the most to me. I have watched Bill Cosby in action my entire life, and what he takes pleasure in is dominating the dialogue. What do I mean by this? Well, first, literally. In interviews about the accusations, he would sit regally with his wife Camille by his side and proclaim, "We don't talk about that," at every turn, running, or trying to run, the interview, often running into the ground. Second, figuratively, here's one example. When I was in college, around the time I was assaulted, I do believe, Lisa Bonet, who played Denise Huxtable on The Cosby Show, was cast in the Robert De Niro horror movie slash thriller Angel Heart. Bonet at the time was occasionally appearing on The Cosby Show and had her own spinoff, all about Denise Huxtable's college experiences, A Different World. Cosby asked to review the Angel Heart script. He learned of the movie's infamous voodoo sex scene, blood on the walls and chicken feathers and a completely naked Lisa Bonet. Cosby ordered Bonet either to not do the movie or not do the sex scene. She refused, stating basically that he wasn't her boss when she wasn't at work. Cosby, always about two things, the Cosby brand and control and domination, kept after her. It was a huge deal at the time. Bonet called Cosby's bluff, and Cosby fired her. A Different World became an ensemble show about college kids at a predominantly black college. Denise Huxtable was no longer a character. I know my parents love me. Stand behind me, come what may. I know now that I'm ready. Because I finally heard them say, it's a different world. Eddie Murphy told a famous joke about Cosby trying to control every narrative and dominate situations he thought were his to dominate way back in 1987. He told us all about Cosby's behind-the-scenes behaviors in the entertainment industry when he talked about Cosby calling him to tell him not to use so much profanity in his routines. We heard, but we didn't quite listen. I'll put a video clip of that part of the routine up for the website entry for this episode. Now, what is the context of all this? Why does the conviction of one actor mean so much to me, impact me and others so strongly? For those of my generation and those who are older, Bill Cosby is an icon. For the African-American community, he's a legend and a paragon. Bill Cosby was the first black actor to have his own television show, I Spy. He led the way for everybody else. In 1965, a black man portrayed a Pentagon spy on national TV as the equal partner to a white man. In 1965, for context, Malcolm X was assassinated, and Dr. Martin Luther King and John Lewis, with more than 25,000 others, marched from Selma to Montgomery to protest the death of Jimmie Lee Jackson, an unarmed demonstrator killed by an Alabama police officer. And the Watts riots surged for 6 days after accusations of police brutality and the arrest of a black man accused of drinking and driving by a white police officer, and that police officer's subsequent arrest of the man's family members who'd arrived on the scene. 34 people died. And during all this, a black man was playing an esteemed Pentagon employee as the lead of his own television show on one of the only 3 television networks. So who is Bill Cosby in the context of my life? I'm white, and I was born in 1972. He was omnipresent, and he was truly what people call him, America's dad. My first memory of him is his being on the children's show Captain Kangaroo. He did a learning and problem-solving segment on the show called Picture Pages. It was simple, shapes and color matching, but he did it with real humor and sweetness, and it was very engaging. It was my favorite part of the show, and I still remember the little theme song to it. Then he created his own children's show, the animated Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. Again, monumental. Black kids saw themselves and their own surroundings in a Saturday morning cartoon show for the first time. As with Picture Pages, it had an educational theme, but this time it was about social and personal decisions and about negotiating relationships.
Coming at you with music and fun, and if you're not careful, you may learn something before it's done. So let's get ready, okay? Hey, hey, hey!
Then, in the 1980s world of situation comedies, or sitcoms, when nighttime television was devoted to comedic, familial problem-solving in 30 minutes, including commercials, that world was very white. Very white. Until Bill Cosby started The Cosby Show. And it wasn't just about a black family. It was about an affluent black family. An upper-middle-class black family. That had never been seen in American media before. The Huxtable family lived in a large house, both parents had successful careers, and our cultural world was completely changed. And Bill Cosby himself. During all this time from my spy through The Cosby Show, Bill Cosby was doing stand-up comedy. His albums directly inspired many comedians that you admire and enjoy today to take up their own microphones. His routine, Bill Cosby Himself, came out when I was a kid, and we were all pretty much allowed to see it on VHS or listen to the record. It was my introduction to the whole idea of stand-up comedy, which I love to this day. I guarantee that almost anyone my age can quote some part of it right now, right off the cuff, whether it's the dentist visit or chocolate cake for breakfast. I'm almost tempted to do the chocolate cake song. I love it, but I will never ever be able to watch it or listen to it again. I told my story as a survivor of violent sexual assault in episode 34. This girl just had a bad date. For those who have not heard it, I'm going to republish it afresh into the feed following this episode. Here's what Donald Trump said on Twitter that triggered Monday's walkout. Quote, "I have no doubt that if the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have immediately been filed with local law enforcement authorities by either her or her loving parents. I ask that she bring those filings forward so we can learn date, time, and place." Unquote. Mr. Trump, my attack was as bad as I say. It took place over 2 days. The second attack lasting hours, most of the day. I was choked into unconsciousness. I immediately, within 24 hours, called the police. The police refused to take my statement because sexual assault without penile penetration was not a separate criminal charge in the state of North Carolina at that time. And because the perpetrator choked me out with the crook of his elbow and with his forearm rather than his hands, so there was no bruising. In other words, I had no proof. And so it was he said, she said, and that meant the world at that time. One of the local law enforcement authorities said to another over the live police radio, "This girl's just had a bad date. We'll be out of here in a minute." My loving parents and I pursued the only avenue left to us, and I was able to convince the student judicial board that the violent sexual assaults actually occurred. My perpetrator was suspended for one semester, but was unmonitored. He tried to attend classes in another college in the North Carolina University school system for that semester and transfer the credits, thereby gaming the system. And because no one had bothered to flag his account as suspended, I had to hear about it through the grapevine and tell local school authorities to do something about it. I've learned that you shouldn't go through life with a catcher's mitt on both hands. You need to be able to throw some things back. Maya Angelou. And I will tell you right now, Mr. Trump, it's been 37 years. But if I ever hear that my attacker is eligible for a position of high national security or any position of power, I will stand up and name him. And I will persist with my accusation in the face of derision and threats. Luckily, my attacker is in no position of power at all. But I check every now and again to make certain. I feel that it's my responsibility to do so as his victim. So, why did I list all of Bill Cosby's cultural touchstones and accomplishments? Because I really want those of you who aren't American or who are a lot younger than I am to understand how beloved he is and to how important he is as an African-American leader and entertainment personality. Seriously, in the 80s, when he started endorsing Jell-O, we kids ate Jell-O. Period. Jell-O pudding pops were in every freezer of every home I played in as a kid. We all trusted him. He was one of the good guys, and he was a major pioneer on top of all that. The Cosby Show was part of the cultural conversation in school. Even if you didn't watch it, you understood references to it and jokes about it. And you most likely did watch it. You really did. All of that explains why, even though I was pleased with the criminal sentence, I was so afraid he would get off easy due to his celebrity. I was quite saddened as well, and deeply conflicted. And for that, I feel very guilty as a survivor of violent sexual assault. I saw the video of Cosby walking to the transport vehicle in handcuffs and chains, and my inner child's heart broke. But then I read that while he was awaiting sentence and after, when he was removing his watch and his tie and his shoelaces, that he was laughing and joking with his defense team. And then the handcuffs and shackles weren't so difficult to see after all. And I rewatched the video. There's one more part to this whole story. I have to say that no, I do not hope Bill Cosby, quote unquote, learns what it feels like in jail. Not only would I never wish rape upon another human being, but statements like this perpetuate rape culture, which at its core is the pervasive idea that some people do not deserve bodily and sexual autonomy from others. I read online this morning, as I fired up my weird processor to write this script, where someone had gleefully said, "He's going in a whole man, but coming out a man whole." That solves nothing. If Bill Cosby is raped in prison, which is unlikely given the security assessment he'll be given, he will most likely be isolated for his protection. That makes things worse in my mind, not better. Let the violence stop with his punishment. No one deserves to be touched against their will. While I know myself as a creation of God, I am also obligated to realize and remember that everyone else and everything else are also God's creation. Maya Angelou. This has been a culturally changing week and personally changing week, and it's only Wednesday. The first celebrity of the hashtag MeToo movement has been convicted, and the narrative of African-American cultural history has a new postscript, a really tragic one, one that its inheritors do not deserve because of the violent actions of one man. Bill Cosby stole part of Andrea Constant away from the rest of us. He stole who she was when she looked up to her mentor and saw a world full of possibility. He stole her gifts from her and from all of the rest of us. What she might have given back to this world had he not wounded her so deeply and so permanently. He stole that from her and from us. And now remember, he did that 58 more times that we know of. 59 lights, partially or completely blown out. This episode is dedicated especially to the supermodel Janice Dickinson, who has been discredited for years and characterized as crazy, as a harridan, or a fame seeker. Janice is a brave woman who took all that abuse and kept telling her story, and testified in both trials, testifying again even after the mistrial, as she told Cosby, "Yes, she has the last laugh." Janice, this is for you. I believe you. Every word. I was going to die sooner or later, whether or not I had even spoken myself. My silences had not protected me. Your silences will not protect you. What are the words you do not yet have? What are the tyrannies you swallow day by day and attempt to make your own until you will sicken and die of them still in silence? We have been socialized to respect fear more than our own need for language. I begin to ask each time, what is the worst that could happen to me if I tell this truth? Unlike women in other countries, our breaking silence is unlikely to have us jailed, disappeared, or run off the road at night. Our speaking out will irritate some people, get us called bitchy or hypersensitive, and disrupt some dinner parties. And then our speaking out will permit other women to speak until laws are changed and lives are saved and the world is altered forever. So next time, ask, what's the worst that will happen? Then push yourself a little further than you dare. Once you start to speak, people will yell at you. They will interrupt you. They will put you down. They will suggest it's personal. And the world won't end. And then the speaking will get easier and easier. And you will find that you have fallen in love with your own vision, which you may never even have realized you had. And you will lose some friends and some lovers. And you will realize you don't miss them. And new ones will find you and cherish you. And you will still flirt and paint your nails, dress up and party, because as I think Emma Goldman said, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. And at last you'll know with surpassing certainty that only one thing is more frightening than speaking your truth, and that is not speaking. Audre Lorde. Please take care of yourself after listening to this episode. Indulge in some extra seeking out of self-care or making and finding cupcakes now. For some happy videos, check the podcast Facebook group topic tag Making and Finding Cupcakes or Happy Animals. Rain support links and information, in case you need to talk to a trained professional, are in the episode show notes. Remember to manage self-care as the news continues to be about sexual assault and sexual harassment. Rain is an excellent support resource. And take Maya Angelou's advice, please. Quote, as soon as healing takes place, go out and heal somebody else. Till next time, I love you guys.